Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Welcome back, Posh fans. We are running out of content and desperate for you to still listen to us. So today, we are talking through the season as a whole, the 24-25 Peterborough United season in our Up the Poshcast end of season review. Tonight, I am joined by Ashley, Charlie, Max, I'm Harry, and we're going to go through it chronologically, really. And I want to go to Ashley first. Pre-season, just tell us how you felt. Throw us back to those beautiful Spanish shores.
Yeah, tell me about it. Crikey. All that way back, Benidorm special. I think I remember saying that Chris Conclart was absolutely fantastic. Jordan Ebbett was the next Ronnie Edwards. We looked great despite not beating Wimbledon in the Spanish sunset. And then we came back, didn't we? And we pretty much beat most teams that we put in front of us. When I look at my phone, we had a 7-0 against Spalding after just coming back from Spain. Jacob Wakeling scored a hat-trick, was it, I think? And we were like, yeah, we definitely need him in the first team, don't we? Kean Hayes absolutely bust the gut. And we saw that throughout the season with Hayes, is that he was more than willing to bust the gut for the team. We go to Boston, absolute kamikaze football against a National League team where we've got Critchlow at the back and we're winning and then we're losing and then we're conceding goals 6-4. We then go to Stamford and we win 5-0. And again, it's another one where we're just thinking, right, we're playing these teams and we're just absolutely battering them. Con Clark, I'm sure he's got an absolute piss missile from sort of 25 yards out. Behind closed doors game against Colchester, gutted about that. And then the two games at London Road, back to back, that was against Notts County. That was such a great experience. I love watching football. I've just got back today as we record from watching the non-league finals day, two games at Wembley. Watching two games at Posh pre-season was absolutely fantastic. And look, I was hook, line and sinker. I predicted us to win the league. I was the believer, a massive believer. I'd fallen into these traps that we were going to be absolutely fantastic. And then the first game of the season rolled around, didn't it, Harry?
Yeah. And you know what? I'd predicted us to finish sixth. And I predicted Birmingham to finish seventh. So goes to show how good I am at predicting things. I went into that game against Huddersfield and I was in the GH display for it. And I was thinking that it doesn't matter if we lose. This is a team that's just come down from the Championship and only just come down. And they didn't lose many games that year. So as long as we put in a decent performance here, I think there's still a good chance that we're going to have a good season. Plus, there's got to be some gelling time going on. And we played all right at the beginning of that game. First 20 minutes, 25 minutes, I thought we were pretty good. I remember Conclart started on the left and had some space and had at least one good chance. You imagine how different the season might have been for him if he'd scored in that opening game. And Wallin just being an animal, like absolutely like a raging bull in a china shop whenever the ball got anywhere near one of their defenders, just charging into the back of it and tackling it away. And then we conceded. And we conceded through a fairly well-worked goal. And we conceded a second one right before half-time. I want to say it was in injury time of the first half, if I remember rightly. And we did nothing in the second half. I came away from it still thinking, we're all right. We need to gel. But there's still hope here as long as we continue to improve. And we didn't really, did we? I mean, we went to Oxford. I think, Ashley, you were there as well. Like, Charlie and Max, were you at Oxford away in the League Cup? A game that we hoped, having just been beaten by them in the playoff semi-finals, we do a decent showing. Bilakapic showed that he still was incapable of trapping the ball at his feet. Hadn't learned anything over the summer in that regard. And we did nothing in that game, right? There was no real moment of hope. Shrewsbury was good. Shrewsbury was pretty good. Poku's goal was great. Randall was pony until the 80th minute and then turned into Rivaldo for the last 10 minutes of it. And then Exeter, after that 4-1 win against Shrewsbury, where, you know, we're sitting on 6 points out of the first three games, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we were absolutely, like, in for an unbelievable season after Exeter. You know, it was like that thing, it's like the 30 years duck. We never won there. We'd had heartbreak there in the two previous seasons, you know, Oli Kigbe and then Giovanni Brown the season before. And it just felt like we'd never go there and win. It was a long trek in the sun. It was a lovely day. It felt like we were in the Mediterranean. And we won. And we just grinded it out. And it was Manny Fernandez winning every header and scoring an absolute missile from range. And it was like Oddo being tricky and Ricky and Malik both rotating as strikers and that whole thing. It just felt like that was the season there, you know, and I was so excited for the season after that. And then a week later, Ash and I were absolutely stitched up by optimism and we predicted very, very convincing wins over Wrexham. And then we were absolutely battered by them. I mean, it was the day after deadline day. There was a bit of a vibe around the club after Katongo came back and, you know, there was, you know, we did a live and DMAC was getting involved on Twitter and stuff. And yeah, I don't know how Wrexham went that badly, but it really didn't get much better from there. I think deadline day might have actually been the end of the joy for this season.
Yeah, and to be fair, until recently, Charlie, I'll probably actually agree with you. I think deadline day was sort of the pinnacle of excitement, especially when Katongo came back through the door. We'd seen how good he was last year. He was with us for the whole campaign. He really kicked on and replaced Chiozzo, who was our captain until January when he went back to Rotherham. And he came in and stepped up and put in some really good performances and at the end of it, we made it to the playoffs. So to have a player of that caliber back, we were absolutely ecstatic to see him walk back through the door. Nobody thought we'd get him back. We all thought he'd be playing in the Championship. Perhaps in hindsight, there was a reason why he came back after some of the performances he's put in this season that haven't been up to the standard that they were. And his season has been riddled with injury. But at the time, I remember getting absolutely buzzing. The group chat was, we're back. And we were so excited. And not only that, signing Bradley Hionvien as well, which was a fantastic addition because really we didn't have a way of playing any differently. And Bradley brought us that sort of different style of play. And it wasn't until Gillingham in the Bristol Street Motor Strophe where we really got to see like how he plays football.
Yeah, you're right, aren't you? And then look, September sort of flew by, didn't it? And we roll around to a game like Bristol Rovers and we're trying something new and it was like, oh, okay, we're trying to fit people into different positions. Con Clark was pretty much electric for the first 12 minutes and we thought, right, yeah, we haven't seen much of him since the Huddersfield game and we're like, okay, well, we look like we've got a bit of a player and then he decides to go and throw himself into their goalkeeper and snap his collarbone, doesn't he? That was frustrating to say the least and ultimately probably the start of a disappointing season for Con Clark. I know that he's had plenty of struggles in terms of injuries and stuff, but yeah, he sort of looked like he really wanted to take the ball by the horns in the Bristol Rovers game and then ended up sort of shafting himself, really disappointing for me.
Yeah, no, that was a bad day, that Bristol Rovers day, for a load of reasons. Honestly, I don't think I can put into words how much I blame that day for how bad we've been this season because we had a couple of bad results at home and Fergie just threw the baby out with the bathwater, didn't he? And he changed the entire system. He brought Ajiboy back in, didn't he? And started him at right wing back. From the grave, Dave arrived. That was an interesting one. I just remember sort of being in the car and seeing that team sheet and just going, what? Like, I was expecting a couple of changes maybe, but nothing like that. And I mean, it's quite funny to look back on it now, but it was bad because it was Fergie sort of going after, what, 6-7 games of the season, going, I give up on trying to play the way that we have recruited for. I give up on trying to play the way that we've spoken about. I give up on our DNA, effectively. And I honestly don't think that lack of belief that Fergie showed in the players to play the way we want to, I honestly don't think that was ever healed after that point. I think it led to us playing in the very horrific trenches ball way we played through the Christmas period. I think that was sort of ignited by Bristol Rovers. Yeah, I honestly think that was such a bad moment for us this season. A terrible mistake from Fergie. Why did we change the system? It was not needed at that point. We would have beat Bristol Rovers. They are so bad. We would have beat them with any team. Like, they are genuinely awful. Why, Fergie? Why? And we didn't even beat them that convincingly. We went 3-0 up and we nearly bottled it. Yeah, that was a really frustrating day. Even though we won that day, I was fuming.
Yeah, although, despite the horrendous system, which then, as you say, persisted after that game, and Ajiboy also started away at Leighton Orient, was, I think, the emergence of Malik Motherseal in that Leighton Orient game. He was great that day. Assisted Poku. I think it was Ricky who won the penalty, but it was due to good work from Malik in the build-up, and Malik buried the penalty. A game, though, that also... It had those two elements of certain players on the rise and certain players on the fall. And Jed was not good that day. I'm glad that he finished the season strongly, but I think some of the issues that we were going to see with Jed in the middle part of the season were there to see at Leighton Orient. And it might have looked like a good finish for the cameras who weren't there. For the people who weren't there watching on TV. But that first Leighton Orient goal, man, Bilicapic saves that. I think we said it on the pod at the time. Ajiboy was honking. Varlin was honking that day. I'm pretty sure he came off at half-time. Sparks was fine that day, but...
Harry, do you remember that we did that? Do you remember that we did that weird thing with Katongo and Fernandez as well, where when we were attacking, one was playing right back, and then when we were defending, they switched over, and it was like they just never got it right, did they?
Yeah, I've forgotten that, but you're right, yeah. So it had those kind of two elements. And one more thing on the Leighton Orient game as well, unlike the Birmingham game where they were clearly a prize to try and go after, was that I think we went into that Leighton Orient game thinking this is not a great side and we should win this if we have playoff ambitions. It's funny how expectations can change over a season. They got the playoffs and we didn't. And actually, if you look at it in that way, a point away isn't bad. But anyway, enough on that game.
Yeah, do you know what? I think the next thing as well, to go off of the back of probably a disappointing draw in London at Orient, to go to Birmingham, we weren't really expecting a great deal, were we? I think that the optimism was drained out of me and Charlie for definite after Wrexham. To then go to Birmingham and go 2-0 up, that was just absolutely mental. Like, Ricky scrambling the ball in, and that was probably the peak that we saw of Ricky this season, where he was just chasing down everything. It was like he knew that people were watching, he knew that there were people there, and it was just fantastic for him to bundle the ball in. It was the start of Manny from corners. Katongo got injured that game and did his hamstring. JD then came in and put in a relatively good shift, I would say, but at the same time, we showed all of those fragilities that we had at the back, and that we were just so unconvincing. An absolutely fantastic atmosphere at St. Andrews. You know, one of the better ones that we've had all season, a packed out house. And yeah, it was so great for what, 25 minutes? And then for 65 minutes, it was just a disaster, wasn't it?
I think when you look back at seasons and you do these season reviews, you look at games and think, wow, just imagine if we had held on, what could this season have become? And if you look at Birmingham have broken record after record after record. They've flown in League One this season. They're going to do perfectly fine in the Championship. If we'd have managed to hold on to that 2-0 win and go and win, from the scoreline that we had, imagine what this season could have been. Because you look at momentum and you look at shifts, when you play a team that spent the money that they have and have the manager and the project that they have and have the new owners that they've had, and basically everything about Birmingham is positive at the moment, if you go and beat a side like that, the momentum that could have been, I don't know where we could have ended up. I think that stint from Bristol Rovers to Birmingham and then past that, but really those three games, as Charlie said, was the rot, where the rot really really began, and that was unfortunate. And then we saw the rot when we played Wigan the following week, because that was a terrible performance. In fact, it was probably one of the worst. That we've had a lot of bad performances this season, but Wigan stood out to me. It was cold. My lecturer wouldn't let me leave my lecture early, so I was almost late. I had to run to the ground. The pie was cold. We sat the front row. Everything about Wigan was awful. Midweek game, the atmosphere was terrible, and we played like, I can't even put into words how badly we played. And to make it even worse, our captain had to keep Kipriano with his hamstring, which means that we didn't have him for the next, what was it, 3 months, maybe even longer than that we didn't have our captain and basically the player that was going to lead us to our aspiration, which was really what we presumed he'd be. Now, having said that, I don't think Hector actually performed very well up until he did his hamstring. In fact, it was probably some of the worst football I'd seen from him in his stint here. And really, it wasn't until after he came back from his hamstring injury that we saw what Hector Kyprianou can really do. But yeah, diabolical game. And really stabbed the knife home that we weren't getting playoffs, no matter how sort of confident we were. We weren't getting them. And if only I could have drained my optimism at that point.
Yeah, you know what? That was bad. That was bad, Wigan. I mean, I feel like I sort of forgave it at the time because the players put in a hell of a shift, like at Leyton Orient and at Birmingham. And so it felt like it was just a result of tiredness. But yeah, we really shouldn't have let that slide. I mean, God, that night revealed some stuff about certain individuals. You know, George Nevitt, jeez. Do you remember him getting ran in behind for that second goal? But then the Saturday was actually good. We beat Stevenage, which was nice. Would have been a great moment with Poku scoring a last minute winner in front of the London Road end. But then he decided to run the entire length of the pitch to celebrate it in front of the Stevenage fans. I mean, that really just sums it up, doesn't it? I still don't know why he did that to this day. But literally, like, you've just scored a winner in front of the Terrace, which is quite busy that day. They're going wild. Rather than sort of celebrating with them and having that sort of Siriki Dembele versus Derby moment, he just runs the length of the pitch and cups his ears, gets booked. God knows why he did that. And that just stripped us of that moment. And then obviously we played them again midweek. And that rain was bad. I mean, like, that area of the pitch, I really don't know how that game didn't get abandoned, because players were like, our left back was actually swimming at the time, like, it was that bad. That area of the pitch just got clogged. Stevenage were desperate to get it called off, but we kept it on. Those were some good games. That was good vibes, and Stevenage hate us, so that was nice. But then just the rot that you mentioned there, Max. Stevenage was a little break from the rot, but then it came back with vigor, didn't it?
The thing is I've just looked at the table, right? After we drew with Rotherham at home, we did well to get something out of that game, right? And there was some stupid defending in that match. But look, we got 3 goals. There were some green shoots. At that time, ignoring the fact that we played more games than some of the teams above us, we were 1 point off the playoffs. And at that time, Wickham were only 2 points ahead of us, despite being fifth, and we were 12th. So you then have the OK point against Rotherham, and you go to Wickham away, a ground where we constantly lose. We cannot do it at that ground on the edge of the Chilterns. As nice as the scenery is, what happens on the pitch is always a fucking disaster for us. Could this be the moment that they turn it round, get 3 points against a playoff-worthy team, and start to send us up the table? And the answer to that question was yes, until it wasn't yes. And when Ricky scored, and that was at the beginning of the second half, right? Turgid first half, with 1-0 up on the 55th minute. And it was bedlam in that away end, as much as it can be at Wickham away. I was thinking, once again, there's a chance here. My optimism was not drained, as Max put it. But we showed what kind of team we sadly have been for this season in that game as well, where not even that high a level of quality from the opposition can take us out if we allow them to play their game, basically. As long as they have some semblance of a game plan, whether it's direct, or whether it's counter, or whether it's short passing, as long as the opposition was well organised, they'd usually get something out of the game. And wasn't Wickham just a fucking great example of that? Gutting. And after the Wickham game, we were well off it.
Well, Harry, you say we were well off it, but then we seem to have some sort of magical moment against Blackpool at home. And look, Blackpool are a team that came down from the Championship last year, and I've been really in and around it. They signed some good players, and we got after the Wickham game, you just thought, well, top of the table team, you know what it's going to be like, probably another romping. However, Blackpool, I don't think I've seen a team try to play out the back as poorly as them. And I've watched us all season. And in stints this season, we have been dire at playing out the back. Blackpool just did it in a way that was so poor that they'd give it to all of our threats. Ricky, Poku, Randall, Malik. They just kept giving it to them and expecting, and it was a day, and it summarizes the consistency level to an absolute T this season. We just couldn't stop scoring. We just couldn't stop punishing them on mistakes. We couldn't stop. It was 5-1. And we just couldn't stop. Of course, we couldn't keep a clean sheet because we were so poor defensively that a 5-1 win. You know, an absolute romping, and you still can't keep a clean sheet. Had to have rang some alarm bells. But honestly, I don't think Blackpool played that poorly in sort of the possession when they were in possession. They had higher possession rates than us. It was just they kept giving us the football, and we were just in a mood to absolutely slaughter someone. And that's how Blackpool was. And this is what's been so heart-gripping about this season, is you think it's over until it's not. And you go and beat Blackpool 5-1 after losing to Wickham, who are in playoff contention, and thinking it's all over. So it was a great day. Don't get me wrong, because everybody, it was like the we're back moment. You know, we can really kick on from this. But I don't think that was to be, was it?
No, you're right, Max. And we're now at basically the end of October, and we've still not had a league clean sheet, have we? So we rock up to Bolton, where we've had relative average performances, I would say. Ricky got someone sent off.
I've forgotten about Bolton away, Ashley.
Yeah, sorry to bring this one up. Nothing but pain, you know, supporting Peterborough United. We get there, and we didn't really offer anything going forwards, did we? And it was just pure backs against the wall. Goodness gracious me. We think, right, we're there. It's the 95th minute. What are we going to do? Let's just see it out. They get a corner. Ryan de Havilland does what Ryan de Havilland does best and absolutely drags his man down. And you're thinking, oh, for God's sake, it's over. They'll score the penalty. But up steps my favourite Australian goalkeeper. He saves the penalty. He saves the rebound, and then it's like we've brought Sam Curtis on to defend, and he's just stood there watching them do the ball. And that's another throwback player. Anybody remember him? Sam Curtis. Oh, my goodness. What a terrible decision that was to bring in.
I called for him to be Dr. Weech Wages and Dobby to be Dr. Weech Wages for not following in the pen. And I still stand by it to this day. I think I got a bit of grief for it from some of you guys and from a couple of comments. No, I was right. They showed less Dobby, but Sam Curtis showed his character by, in the 95th minute, not following a pen in. He could have stopped on the rebound if he had.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened again as well this season, hasn't it? Like, it happened, was it Exeter at home where they scored the rebound after Bilo saved one as well? Like, that is just the issue, isn't it? Like, you sort of hit the nail on the head there, Ash. I don't want to interject too much, but like, There was just no desire from players like Sam Curtis, was there? They just didn't want to be here. I think that's been one of the thorns in our side. It's like, yeah, That was bad. Oh, God, what a horrific day. I just remember me and you, Ash, just sat in the minibus after Bolton and after Bilo had just been hung out to dry, just like, where do we go from here? Just heartbroken.
Yeah, and do you know what? The last thing probably on the Bolton game was the ball boys, who were obviously like their youth team, giving it absolute big licks to us at the front of the stand, and then absolutely then cacking their pants when they walked past us as we were walking back into the car park and thinking, oh, fuck, I made a massive mistake here. Look, I'm not doing anything. But watching them shit their pants and look for the nearest steward was comedy gold. And then, you know, like, first round of the FA Cup, fresh start for the players. Let's start strong. We've got a lovely away tie at Newport County. What can we do? Let's go there and let's show that we're better than what we've been so far this season. Two goals inside 7 minutes with 2-0 down. And we're thinking, oh, fuck, here we go. We're going to get embarrassed. Newport County, fantastic team in the FA Cup. They've had some great runs in recent years. And we're thinking, right, well, we're going to be the next League One team that they make to look like absolute fools. Then Jack Spark scores a corner. It's not given. It goes under the goal, apparently. Like, what's going on there? And you think, well, this just totally isn't going to be our day, is it? And then, do you know what? The second half, I look at it, we turned it on, didn't we? Joel Randall scored, and then Ricky comes on towards the back end of the game and he scores 2 goals in 4 minutes to take us through to the next round. That was a bloody great away win. And I love the FA Cup. And that was just one of those moments, wasn't it, in the FA Cup. We then roll round to the Virtue game midweek. That was another one. It was like 4-1 against Palace. This was a Palace under-21s team. We've got Adler Nascimento, who's gone to them, somebody that we wanted to keep in our academy. A player like that that we never got to experience, somebody similar to Flynn Clark, although we did see like brief parts of Flynn Clark. And just, you know, we've torn them a new one, essentially. I think, I can't remember exactly, was that a game that Harley Mills potentially scored? I think I was actually speaking to Ewan at the time whilst he was trying to film one of his pitchside poshes, and I was just chewing his ear off all game, trying to get in his head and try and slag Clive off a little bit, you know, because that was the let's bully Clive era. Although it turned out it got worse, didn't it? Jesus Christ. But, you know, it was a great start to the cup games. We've won our group. We've qualified first. It means that we get home time the next round. We've got through in the FA Cup and thinking, right, okay, we may not be fantastic here, but let's carry us forwards. And, you know, what rolled around the week after?
Yeah, I mean, Cambridge at home. What a day. That is one of the good things that came out of this season was we, like, own the Cambridge derby now, don't we? Like, they've gone down 6 points, but that first home game was unreal. I mean, I remember we did some lives leading up to it, and the hype was building, and like we were on form a little bit, and then that day we just played so well, like we tore them apart. I mean it was a nervy first half an hour, but once the floodgates opened, it was I mean to score more goals than we did last season was just insane. The atmosphere was great. The GH clamour was amplified again by that. It was just a really, really great day. I think it was actually better than the season before in terms of the atmosphere, because people saw the GH the year before for Cambridge and were gutted that they didn't get tickets in it, so it sold out very quickly for this year's game. Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, it was one of the great days, and we've had some good days this season, but this was like a superb one. I mean, it was a home game. I didn't have many good home games. Got beat a lot at home, but that one game where we just hammered them and they were just so rattled. It was just beautiful to see. Yeah, an amazing day.
Yeah, it was. And it was an absolute thumping, wasn't it? And you have to look and think that obviously we'll talk about, you can call it the away leg of the derby, but we'll talk about the away game later on when it rolls around. But to do the double this season, and then what we call it, the double-double in back-to-back seasons, was absolutely fantastic. And the atmosphere was fabulous. That's what a derby should feel like. Absolutely fabulous in terms of just everything that happened, the scoreline, and yeah. Completely over the moon. And it was one of those moments where you just think, we're back, you know, it can be on, and it just wasn't to be, was it? Because we then went on 3 straight league defeats following that, with a win against Notts County in between. But Reading, we lost at Reading 2-1, and then Burton, who I believe were rock bottom, if not close to rock bottom, beat us 1-0. And that was that. I just remember the Twitter head loss now. It was craziness that the response that there was on Twitter after that game. And really, that was it, wasn't it? Well, we say that, but there'll be moments in this sort of video where we just keep going, it was over. And then all of a sudden it was back again. Hockey did his hamstring in that Burton loss, which was our fourth hamstring injury this season. And that was it, wasn't it, really? We just lost our star player. He'd basically been carrying us throughout the year. From the very start to then. I mean, he was on electric form. He looked absolutely unplayable. I believe he just won his second player of the month. He was on for his third, really, if we look at it. He probably would have won three on the bounce. He just looked absolutely unstoppable. And that was it. Our player had gone. And with Northampton, the game after, it begged the question, who was going to step up to the plate? And actually, nobody did, because we lost to Northampton Town away. And that was another game where you just thought we really should be capitalising on something. But again, the performances were just too poor. They were just too poor. And then Crawley happened. And we beat Crawley. We beat Crawley 4-3, which is the best part, because that game was box office, wasn't it? Every game against Crawley seems to be box office. We score a lot of goals. We concede a lot of goals, and both teams just sort of go, which one can score more? And usually it swings in our favour, doesn't it? And this time was no different. A 4-3 win. It was absolutely raucous until the end. But that started the rot, didn't it? That Crawley game, it started the rot to follow from December all the way, really, until late January, early February.
Yeah, I reckon the Christmas period proper was that Stockport game, right? And that, so those fans, and there can't be many of them, who went to, I count it as being seven Christmas period games. If you move to the beginning of January a little bit, basically the period between you finishing work and starting work, if you're doing 9 to 5 and you have those 2 weeks off, there were seven games. And I was at Stockport away, and I was at Mansfield at home. Dross. Absolute dross in both games. Yeah, all right. Randall scored an okay goal in the first half of the Stockport game. He also completely bottled a chance that would have taken us back up 2-1 in the second half. And there was nothing beyond that. Mansfield, where do we start? That was a day that I think we all realised that while there might be hope for Nevitt later, that hope for Nevitt is not now. He's too young. He's not strong enough. He's not positionally aware enough, because he had one of the worst performances of the season, sadly, in that Mansfield game on Boxing Day at home as well, to a team that hadn't performed that well up till then and didn't do much for the rest of the season either. Absolutely gutting.
Yeah, you're right. And then we had this fantastic FA Cup draw, didn't we? And we were like, yeah, buzzing Everton away. We'll take 6,000 posh fans on a Saturday, on a Sunday. Then it gets moved to a Thursday, and that was disastrous, wasn't it? That slashed the attendance to sort of 3,000, which was still a great turnout, but it just ruined everything that the FA Cup was about. I talk about how great the first round was, how great the second round was, but the third round was ruined, wasn't it, really, by that game being on a Thursday night. And it just felt wrong. And then all of a sudden, we're still league games. We've not had a clean sheet yet. Still, what are we doing? And then we get round to Leyton Orient. And just before Leyton Orient, pure off-the-pitch uproar. Can't remember when it was. It late night, Monday at like 8 o'clock it got announced. Oh, rebranding. Oh, my goodness. That was a field day.
In that initial survey that went out for the rebranding, I literally wrote in every box, please don't do this, Clive.
And do you know what I wrote in every box? Please make sure it's spelt right. That was literally the only thing. And I said to Chris, I spoke to Chris last week, and I was like, look, I probably should have taken that, submitted another one and said, look, ignore the first one. I'm taking the mick here. Please, can we just make sure that it's spelt right? That was a little bit of banter. But, you know, we've had fan forums, we've had all of that sort of stuff, and I think that the majority have come round to it. Yeah, the Leyton Orient game was the game that I spoke to Chris. I spent 2 hours talking to him. I can't really tell you much about the game other than the fact that we kept our first clean sheet, and we felt like that was a really good result. A 0-0 against Leyton Orient, throwing back to what Harry said, a 2-2, and it felt like an absolute disaster, like we should have been beating them. And then Exeter again, we're 1-0 up. Oh my goodness, Taylor Dunn, what are you doing at the back post, throwing 3 points away and gifting them a penalty? Like Charlie said, we don't follow in. They score a rebound. Bilo makes another penalty save and they don't follow it in. And it was like, okay, well, we've got 2 points from two games. That'll just ease us into a nice sort of Lincoln derby, which it's a bit of a grudge match, isn't it, after the Smodics penalty. I always go into those games with confidence. I feel like we always have the beating of Lincoln. How very, very wrong I was. I think I lost my head.
That's when the relegation jitter started as well, right? Like, after that loss, till then, we've been, say, 6 points clear, even though Crawley had games in hand. But after Lincoln, was it after Lincoln, actually, that you had your rant saying you guys need to buck up your ideas? Or was that Bristol Rovers?
So we'd had Lincoln and we were like, okay, well, we brought in experience at the back. We've got Carl Johnston in, we've got Taylor Dunn in, we've got Sam Hughes in. They're going to solidify us, which they did for those two games, Exeter and Leyton Orient. And then we go to play Lincoln and concede 5 goals. Like, what were we doing? And then Wigan, that wasn't particularly memorable. We did win that. And then, like you say, Harry, Bristol Rovers was head loss of the season. I remember PT Ben Jones tweeting, there's an irate looking fan at the front screaming at people. I'm trying to tell Cipriani that he's spineless. He's the worst captain that we've had. Conclart's coming over and just basically listening, and I'm venting. I'm raging because I'm like, oh my God, I've said, and we'll mention this again when we go back to the predictions episode that we did before the season. I said that Peterborough United will never get relegated from League One. And I'm sat there after watching us get beaten 3-1 against Bristol Rovers, like Charlie said, an absolutely fucking appalling team, by the way.
You know what, well, there's one more anecdote from that day, Ashley. For those listening, Ashley and I, and also John, had made a rare appearance at a game, Mr. VPN himself. But there's one more anecdote about that day, right, which was half-time. Because at half-time, the players were fucking around, the ones on the pitch. There was no real warm-up. And you actually shouted at them, say, any danger. I think that's all you shouted was any danger. And they finally actually started passing it properly, because up until then, I think they were just doing Rabonas to each other. Reminding me of earlier in the year, we got away with it because we won this game. Shrewsbury away, Critchlow organising a Rabona hit the crossbar challenge. Just showed the lack of professionalism. It showed when no one's watching, right? Coaching staff weren't out there because they're in doing the team talk. How do the players behave at halftime in a warm-up that is self-organised? Just goes to show, really, at that time in the season anyway. You know, not necessarily saying they're like this all the time, but at that point, they did not realise the fight we were in, because they wouldn't have been fucking around like that away at Bristol Rovers.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking Bristol Rovers anecdotes, one more, which is about before the game, when our good friend Harry here punched a football into a five-year-old girl's face, wounding her, making her cry. And that was probably the only thing that got any sort of laugh the entire day from anyone, because everything else was just an absolute joke.
If Tom Clark had actually put the ball in the net like the drill, you know, he was meant to shoot at the net, not into the fans. And look, the ball came my way. It was over here. I had palmed it aimlessly. And yes, the ball did hit a small child in the face and she was quite upset. But she got a snood out of it. Chris Conclart came over, said sorry, and handed over. Maybe it was a snood, a beanie, whatever. So there you go. It all worked out in the end, except for the result.
Yeah, look, people pay good money for match-worn smelly tops, don't they? You know, candidate number one here, guilty. Like you say, I remember many things from that game. Otto basically not somehow catching up with the ball down the far end and it running out. I think Otto got zeros from pretty much all of us, and Dale gave him a minus 10 that game. My spreadsheet broke. I think that he's still suffering from that in his average ratings, which I'm sure that we'll put out at some point this week. And then I remember after the game, I had a go at Con Clark, indirectly wanting him to have a go at Kyprianou. And then I'm picking up my flag from the segregation between the Bristol Rovers fans. And Charlie Hayne, I think it is, from the Talking Gas podcast, was there. And he's like, what's going on? And then there's loads of Bristol Rovers fans bantering me like, oh, you're going down, you're shit. And I'm like, okay, we might be today, but let's just review this at the end of the season. And I know that Charlie definitely had his own vindication when we leapfrogged them and they dropped into the relegation zone. But knowing that they got relegated after that peppering that I took was creme de la creme. I'm not actually bothered that Cambridge got relegated. Watching Bristol Rovers go down was a personal season highlight for me just because of that away game. I'm absolutely delighted. Couldn't have happened to a nicer club. The guys that we speak to from Bristol Rovers, lovely guys. But, you know, the whole thing, just sort of fantastic.
So we then had the Cheltenham at home EFL Trophy game. We won. Happy days. Through to the next round. Not many of us went to Charlton, right? It was you and me, Ashley. And I want to say there's one other there. Dell, right? And, oh, man, that one was frustrating. But definitely less bad than Lincoln and Bristol Rovers, right? At least there was some heart in trying to defend that lead. Defend that draw. Down to 10 men. We've got one back to 1-1 somehow. And that was gutting. But, as I say, it was a more encouraging performance, which then leads into the grand one loss in 10 games that then followed when the relegation worries ameliorated.
Yeah, you talk about Huddersfield and things getting better that day, Harry, and I think that was sort of the start of the turnaround for me. I mean, I went there expecting us to get battered. You know, Stevenage, we got a draw out the week before, but that was, like, nobody was really happy with that, was it? That was very much like a what even happened kind of day. But Huddersfield, it felt like a big game. I was really excited to go to Huddersfield just because I liked their ground, and it was superb. It was absolutely superb. We went there. We should have scored a lot more than we did. Like, we battered them that day. Like, we were the better team by a long way. Odo came alive a little bit on the left-hand side. You know, Bradley came on and had his cameo and was upping the fans. And that was the start of sort of the Bradley clamour as well. Teo had done absolutely fizzing it in or from the left-hand side. We defended really well. Yeah, that was a really good, really good day. That it just felt like it felt like I was sort of getting detached from Posh at that point. It felt like I was getting increasingly sort of distanced from this group of players and I wasn't enjoying them. But that day sucked me right back in because it was just like, it was such good scenes at the end with Melts as well, Ryan Melton, who was leaving at that point. Just really lovely day. And it sort of made a lot of the difficulties of the weeks and months leading up into it quite worthwhile. And to be fair, that period was very worthwhile. I mean, that was a great week because obviously straight after Huddersfield, we had the Wrexham semi-final, which I didn't go to, but that looked like an amazing night.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, we talk about amazing nights. We had one straight after that, wasn't it? And that was Wrexham away in the Virtue Trophy. They've beaten us twice in the league this season. And we'd come to it finally, hitting a rich vein of form. And I was bang up for it. I was so excited. Another chance to go and play at Wembley. After the excellent memories I made last year, I didn't think we'd be back this year, especially after the struggle that we'd had. And we had an opportunity to go and do it. Of course, it was against sort of the Hollywood sort of franchise that they're sort of building. And look, it was a game that I didn't necessarily think we'd win. I thought Wrexham have been a phenomenal side this season. I don't think there's anybody here that's gonna say that they aren't. And they've done the job getting three back-to-back promotions. It was never going to be easy going to their place to take an opportunity for them to play at Wembley. Well, that probably would have been so good for their documentary. Imagine that. They go up and they had a chance to play at Wembley. So they probably had fireworks up their arses to put on a performance and 2-0 up. Game was done and dusted, really, wasn't it? At least that's what you thought. And so, but Bradley Honvier and Malik Mothersill had other plans. And they said it's dependent. And Bradley scoring at the last minute while they were all singing Que Sera, we're going to Wembley. And then all of a sudden, he pops up with the most unorthodox goal. Like, he's tried to chip it to Malik, he's hit a defender, he's bobbled on the floor, and he's just absolutely rifled it into the back of the net and really swayed the momentum, because I never fancy the team that I support on penalties. I don't for club, I don't for country. There's something about penalties that I always get really, really scared about. You know, they never seem to go your way. And Jed Steer making fantastic saves, especially against Paul Mullin, who's been a good striker at League One and League Two level. But also, you just know that he was going to give it right stick, wasn't he, if he'd scored that and they'd gone through, being ex-Cambridge. He wanted that all night, it felt like. And for his penalty to be saved and our captain to send us through was absolutely fantastic. And what a great night it was to finally, after such a horrid season, and really it has been a horrid season, to beat a team that have gone up automatically this year, and book ourselves a place at Wembley.
And yeah, although before Wembley, we had the end of the unbeaten run. I mean, there were some great moments on the way, right? Charlton at home, what a beautiful counter-attacking performance that day was. And we absolutely dominated them. What else did we have? Reading was gutting, to be honest. And I think on a different day, we could have got something out of that game. Bit of a reversion to form. But Crawley, with the exception of Wembley, was probably the last great moment of this season. For those of us who were there, before we started recording, Charlie reckoned it was the best away day of the year, again, ignoring the Bertie Trophy final. I reflexively wanted to disagree with Charlie, but now that I've thought about it, I actually agree. Crawley away was great. It was also just in the middle of absolutely nowhere. You have to get the Thames Link all the way down past Gatwick Airport. You get off, walking through residential houses. There's no shops on the way until you're literally right next to the ground. There's a couple of pubs, if that. And 4-3. What a game. What a game. And also, as Ashley so kindly mentioned in the comments that we have, it was meant to be seven of us. For the first time that season, it was meant to be all seven. John was not there because, and this is not an exaggeration, his dog yanked his girlfriend's arm while she was walking him so hard that she broke her shoulder. And he had to obviously take care of her. So we were one man down. And it was just a six.
Don't forget honourable mention to John's dog, who is named after George Boyd in Boydie. So, you know, Boydie is a woman abuser, allegedly.
I mean, you're right, Harry. Crawley was elite. Definitely my favourite away day of the season. But you've not mentioned what came a very close second, which was Cambridge away. How have you missed the double-double? I mean, it ridiculous.
I didn't forget Cambridge away. I just forgot that it was in that 10-game run. But you're right. I have gone past Cambridge away, haven't I?
Yeah, you have. I mean, that's a day I'll never forget. It was my 18th birthday. I mean, what a day to have it. I was... That Taylor Dunn goal, that free kick, was my moment of the season. It was just a sheer sort of ecstasy and relief of him finally scoring that goal and us finally breaking through. And the absolute limbs in that terrace away end. I mean, I much prefer that terrace to the one on the end. There was some serious bodies in there. I was battered and bruised the next day because of it. It was superb. What a day that was. beating Cambridge away is always satisfying. It had that extra little satisfaction this year because it felt like we effectively relegated them that day. And as they were going down, we just gave them a little kick in the head on the way out as well. Superb. Yeah, the double-double. Cambridgeshire is just blue, isn't it?
Yeah, and a little anecdote from that day, as we mentioned, it was Charlie's birthday. And he brought a friend with him that just drank Worthington's all day long and really spoilt my pre-match until we got to Cambridge. And luckily we won, because if we hadn't, I would have been raging. But having said that, it was an excellent day, wasn't it, Cambridge? Absolutely fantastic. And I do have to completely agree. In terms of the stand, it was fantastic that we got moved and absolutely cluttered into this tiny compartment of their shithole. I mean, it was really, really small, wasn't it? And the people who had bought the seated stands had wriggled their way past the stewards and all piled in with us. And we were like sardines squished in there. So as soon as Taylor Dunn had fired in an absolutely fantastic free kick to send us all into bedlam, I can't put into words or describe sort of the celebrations. So that was definitely my favourite away game of the season. If we're gonna go onto which one was my favourite, it has to be that. It was absolutely fantastic to do the double-double, and as Charlie said, effectively send them down was brilliant.
Yeah, I think that something else that probably needs mention, which I quite enjoyed from that Cambridge away game, was the fact that we got to see Lodz's FC stickers sponsorship that he got on the away end. Now, look, I took a bit of a peltering on Friday, didn't I, for Danza Logistics sponsoring Faith Horner over at Northampton and, you know, being stood there. So, you know, just to sort of throw Lodz under the bus as well, Lodz actually does contribute to the Cambridge United budget for each season. So make of that what you will. And to move forward to another derby game, mentioning my second favourite Northampton team, allegedly, that was a disaster, wasn't it? I think back to games, I think that Lincoln was the worst game. Then we go to Bristol Rovers was the worst game. And then all of a sudden they managed to like top trump themselves. And Northampton happens, doesn't it? A week before we're going to Wembley against the best team that League One has ever seen. It was just a disaster from start to finish. I know that a few of us, we were in the sponsors lounge, weren't we? So we had a fantastic view of it. And it was like, oh, I still cannot believe how spineless that performance was, unfortunately. And Otto got man of the match. Dale's going over and he's trying to tell him to smile despite getting dicked 4-0.
Like, we can't say that it was the red card that lost that game for us. We were already 1-0 down, getting battered, right, before Teo lost his head.
Yeah, Harry, I'd actually completely forgotten about that. Sorry, Charlie. I'd completely forgotten that he got red carded. And Charlie, yeah, I'm not going to steal your thunder on that head loss after the game. You can have that one.
Oh, I tell you what, I was fuming. I still am, sort of. I did have a little like moment of internal joy when we found out that it's unlikely that Tayo Dunn's going to sign on, because I still haven't forgiven him. I'm going to be honest. I still haven't forgiven him. I thought it might be one of those things that I get over time, but no, I think I just set my stall out on it very early, that I was unhappy. I thought it was unacceptable. I thought it was something worth not offering the contract over. Amongst other things, by the way, like there was the Exeter penalty that we talked about, him getting sent off at Cambridge very unnecessarily, should have been sent off at Reading, should have been sent off at Crawley. He's clearly not, you know, mentally fit to be in the team, in my view. I was angry. I was really angry after that. Like that, I think being in the sponsors lounge almost made it worse. And then speaking to Bradley after the game and him sort of like being like, he had to pick up a bottle of champagne for Tayo Dunn because he didn't want to pick it up because he felt bad. Still didn't help. I was still fuming, yeah. And I still am today. I still blame him a lot for that game.
Yeah, it was grim viewing, Northampton, wasn't it? And it was one of difficulty because you've just talked about how amazing it was to do the double. Whether you want to call it a rivalry, a derby, a grudge match, whatever you want to call it, you know, they did the double on the knee in derby over us, didn't they? And ultimately that was a real kick in the teeth. You know, everything seemed to not necessarily be going well, but we're two games out from going to Wembley. We need to be in a good run of form. Also, we probably needed to rotate and get some of the players that were going to play at Wembley in. I still think Mills should have started. And you go into a game against local rivals, a derby, whatever sort of tickles your fancy, and you get absolutely pumped. It's never good, is it? And then you've got to take that performance and play Birmingham twice, once at home and then once at Wembley. And you've got to basically take that performance, tuck it between your legs and move on. And how difficult would that have been? And I think that sort of showed, because the performance at London Road compared to the performance at Wembley was night and day, wasn't it? I mean, Birmingham looked like they never really got out of third gear. Was there a little bit of tactics in play with Fergie not showing Birmingham our game plan and sort of just saying that we're going to be stubborn and playing one certain way? I don't know, but Poku scored and he did that celebration, didn't he, where he ran over to the away end and showed his shirt and almost apologised to them, which I think gave a lot of us an inkling of where he'll be off to in the summer. I mean, yeah, Birmingham just put on a show, didn't they? They never really got our third gear. They got promoted, I think, guaranteed themselves automatic promotion at our place, which was very funny, wasn't it, Harry? That they did it at our place, considering what happened earlier on in the season. But then obviously we had to go to Wembley, didn't we? And after that performance, I think it's probably one of the sort of every person that I had asked, do you think we've got a chance? Outright said no. Nobody truly believed, did they, deep in their heart, that we were going to beat Birmingham as convincingly anyway as we did, because I'm sure there'd be some. But wow, what a performance. And one, Ashley, that you must have been overly happy to have travelled back from holiday from and shown your commitment to the game.
Yeah, you're right. Do you know what I said in the vlog that I did? If you haven't watched that, go back to that one. It was an interesting one, edited by Caden as well. I couldn't really win when I was booking those flights back, because if I didn't book the flights back, we would have won. I'd have missed it. I'd have been sat there watching it on a delay in Turkey. And then if I were to have come back, I was expecting to lose, but have a great day out at Wembley. So to have won 2-0, take a two-goal lead for the second time this season against Birmingham, who would have written that story? You know, Harley Mills, who we all want here next season, don't we? And then Kyprianou sort of getting that little sign-off as such. Max, the only thing that you didn't get was your Ricky J. Jones snake into the corner in front of the posh faithful that were there in their numbers, 20,000 of them. So look, Wembley was a great day. We've banged that drum multiple times, and it will be one that I hope that we can go three times running, and I will be making sure that I do not book my holidays around the Virtue Trophy final for next season, praying that we get there again, although I'm not confident in the slightest.
Yeah, it was absolutely unreal, and it was a bit weird coming back down to earth after that, because we still had a relegation battle to make sure that we didn't get sucked into. And to be fair, we didn't, with two pretty turgid draws, one against Stockport, one against Barnsley. Highlight for us as a podcast was getting mentioned on Sky Sports in the Barnsley game. The commentator had clearly listened to us beforehand and directly mentioned us by name, which was great. But after the Barnsley game, it was certain at that point, after two 1-1s, Peterborough United were staying up. And we followed it with yet another draw, Bolton at home, a game that we absolutely should have won. It was interesting that kind of took us into this phase of half playing for pride, half seeing which players don't check out and go to the beach when there's nothing to play for. And look, to be fair, the Bolton game was all right among some not great ones towards the end of the season, wasn't it? And on another day, we win that. And Mothersill played very well that day.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? And then, like you say, Harry, we're safe. We've got two away games to wrap up the season. And like I just mentioned previously, you thought it couldn't get any worse after Lincoln. You thought it couldn't get any worse after Bristol Rovers. You thought it couldn't get any worse after Northampton. And then we go to Mansfield. And for the second time this season, we're 3-0 down at half-time. The players were in the changing rooms for probably 6 minutes. think Fergie obviously just probably shouted at them all for 6 minutes and told them all to go fuck themselves and go sort this absolute mess out that they'd created on the pitch. And they didn't really, did they? I remember Mother Seal and Otto were both sat on the bench when they came out. And I was like, oh my God, it's just a disaster. We're going to end up getting completely battered again. It's going to be another like 5-1 against Lincoln. We got the 4-2. It was average, wasn't it? It wasn't anything special. And then we go to Rotherham and we're thinking, what are we going to get? We score after a minute. Otto, he's back. He's playing on the left wing. He played on the right wing at Mansfield and he was crap. He's not a right winger. He's a left winger. 30 seconds, less than 30 seconds, and he's shown us what he can do. And then just absolute calamity at the back. And then, you know, for some reason, 1,200 Posh fans clapped this squad off despite it being just an absolute disaster, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was a disaster to an extent, but also I didn't go to either of those two games. And so I was more than happy to see what happened in those games because I honestly think they were the best thing that ever happened to us. Fergie and Darrow were hoping that, you know, Chris Conclark would turn into Lee Tomlin and Gustav would score hat-tricks in every single one and the midfield pivot of O'Brien Brady and Ryan de Havilland would click like, you know, a well-oiled machine. And it didn't happen, surprisingly. Probably the best thing that's going to happen to us this season because it means that, I mean, Darrow said himself, it means that he's going to have to reevaluate his transfer strategy in the summer. It means he needs to sign more players. It means he's hopefully realised how inept some of the players we have are. Yeah, I think it's a good thing. And I know it must have been depressing spending that Wednesday night in Mansfield. I know it must have been difficult. But from someone who just wants to see a decent football team next season, I am so thankful that we did not perform in those last games of the season because we just can't have another season like this one. It was terrible.
In the butchered words of Mick McCarthy, you say that we can't have another season like this one. We can. And we might. But we're there. Yeah. What a year as well to start a podcast. Basically, well, I say nothing to cheer about. We won a trophy. How many teams actually go to Wembley as well for the second year in a row and retain a trophy? We've got to be grateful for that. Credit to Fergie for pulling that one out of the bag with three of our regular four defenders not available for that game as well. And yeah, I mean, I agree though, Charlie. Let's hope the next season is a lot more cheerful and we've got a few more episodes where we can talk about how proud we are of the players and the performances they put in. But for now, thank you. We'll be back next week with our end of season player awards as well. So look out for that episode when it arrives. But for now, thank you for listening. Like and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. Please comment with your moment of the season and any comments that we missed about certain games that you went to. And also, were you one of those people that went to every single game over the winter period? Because there were a lot of away games in there. And if you did, let us know that as well. Because as I say, there can't have been many. That's it. Up the podcast.
Up the podcast.
Up the podcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
Absolute chaos this episode.
Yeah. You know what? It's actually, it's made me look at this season in a different light.